Hey folks, welcome back to the DC3Cast. My name is Brian. With me, as always, are Zach and Vince. And we are here to talk about two comics that are coming out on April 2nd, 2024. Starting with Birds of Prey, number 8, written by Kelly Thompson, illustrated by Javier Pina and David Lopez. We have not checked in on this book in a couple of months. There is a new team running around in this two-issue arc, with some carryover from the last squad, obviously. But there is a couple of new members here. And this is part two of a two-part story that takes place at a fashion show. And that's all the preamble I think I have for this. Vince, what'd you think of this?
I really liked it. I felt it was pretty insubstantial. It was a very slight issue. But I still really liked the vibe and the playfulness and the art. I know it's not the same artist that did the first arc, but it's stylistically and tonally in line, and you know that's my bread and butter. So I really enjoyed it for what it was, even though more so than the first arc, this feels kind of thin.
Yeah, I wonder if that is a consequence of it not being Leonardo Romero's art on this one. Had there just this two-issue arc because he needed some time to catch up, and so they didn't want to do a big bombastic arc without him there, and so they just did this sort of smaller, slighter arc. But I have to say, like, I thought it was a whole lot of fun, and I think that this issue displays like a lot of what makes this book good, both from a visual and storytelling perspective. Zach, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I didn't read the first part, but I, got it pretty well. Mm-hmm. I followed it. The art, like it wasn't quite on the same level, but it I felt like it still matched pretty well, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I wasn't sure about like the Barda characterization. It almost felt like it was approaching like not who am I thinking of? There's a
Chris Hemsworth Thor.
No, it's not quite that. It's like Drax, like Guardians of the Galaxy Drax. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Okay, I can see that. Sure, yeah.
It was like approaching that level, which kind of like bothered me a little bit, but it was also like pretty funny that, the beefcake bit and like her taking off her clothes because she thought the bad guy's clothes were like mind control or whatever. So she was like, oh, I thought the clothes were mind control. That was like a pretty good bit. But yeah, it did mostly seem like a transition thing, like getting us into the next arc. And I'm excited for like whatever the next arc is, but
well, the book ends on a pretty fun cliffhanger.
Yeah, it does. It does.
And so I thought that was good too. Yeah, I mean, I think that this is, I know Vince, you were initially very skeptical on this because of Kelly Thompson's Marvel work. Are you feeling better about her writings having read more of this book now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just don't go back to Marvel. Just stay here where it's good. I like this again. This book is not overdoing. It's not overdoing the cloying dialogue that I often found in her work over at Marvel,
Right.
In fact, I don't think it, if you told me this was the same writer, I don't know if I would believe you. Maybe that's my bias, but like, I don't know. The jokes are actually funny here, which I didn't find that to be the case most of the time on previous work,
Right.
And I like the I see what you mean, Zach, about the Barda characterization. And I think like there's an argument to be made that like Barda's history going back to Fourth World and Kirby and all that stuff should be a little bit more treated with a little more reverence than this, maybe. But the team really does need a personality like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, if you squint and you excuse it on that level, I think it works pretty well.
My issue with a lot of those types of characterizations are when they seem to take away from what makes the character good or interesting by, like, leaning too heavily on that stuff. And mm-hmm. I feel like Barda, I mean, what Barda's most notable characteristic is that she just kicks ass all the time, that she is this intense, fierce warrior. And I feel like that is absolutely on display here. So this doesn't diminish the Barda we know and love. It just adds another layer, which you could absolutely be well within your rights to call annoying, but, you know, it is adding something to the character.
Yeah.
It's additive, yeah. Not reductive.
Yeah. I'm just glad that, like, Maps continues to be a part of the book. Like, that's just such a cool turn for the character. So
yeah. And just a very cool costume, and, like, mm-hmm. even
yes.
costumes are good.
10 out of 10.
Costumes are good. 10 out of 10. She appears halfway. She literally appears, like, in a puff of smoke or something halfway through the issue. And it just, when she comes in, it just looks so cool too. You know, there's like, yes. there's like a Kirby crackle to it. And, it's like she's coming out of a different book and looks like a Japanese Sentai character. Right. And, it's just, yeah, it gives the book a jolt for sure. That it already didn't. It doesn't. It's not that it needed a jolt, but it's just another ingredient to what has been a really enjoyable book.
Yeah, I'll agree with all that. I think that's well said. I know that this is not Leonardo Romero's work, but and Vince, you touched on it briefly. But what did you boys think about the art that is here?
Oh, I said I didn't like it quite as much, but I thought it, like, matched pretty well, and it was still quite good. You know, if this was the regular art for the book, I still think it would be a pretty good looking book relative mm-hmm. to the rest of, you know, DC's publishing line right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I you know me, it's stylistically, it's what I want. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and I maybe it's not as technically impressive or maybe not quite as consistent as Romero, but I don't know if I can even say that, because I enjoy when comics look like this in general.
I also thought that it did a nice job of presenting both, like, the birds in you know, bikinis and the beefcake stuff in a way that was it certainly didn't hide from trying to be sexy, but it didn't feel like it was lurid at all. Like, it was, I thought it was handled perfectly in terms of how much to sort of lean into the sexiness of it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up, because I kind of had some thoughts about that too, which are that, like, you know, some people complain that, like, you know, the bad comics fans will say, complain that, like, costumes aren't skimpy enough anymore, or, like, but what they're really complaining about is that, like, men are no longer drawing proportions like they were in the 80s and 90s or whatever, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. When the reality is this comic and this arc in particular, both issues, are a really great example that you can do that stuff. First of all, I think that's BS to begin with, because, like, every month we get a half a dozen variant covers of Power Girl, and, you know,
yes,
some people draw it more modestly and others definitely do not. So that stuff still exists for people.
And we know
that
which
want
ones
it,
Vince,
you know?
Buy it.
Okay, come on. but what I'm saying is, like, there is no reason why that stuff can't be in a comic. And this is a perfect example of why. It's just that, like, what the intent of what that stuff was before is maybe not as inclusive as what it can be now. You know what I
yes,
mean?
Yes, agreed. Yes, like, that's a really
that
good way
stuff
of putting
it. Yeah, that stuff was made for a very specific person back then.
Yes.
And, you know, perverts.
Sure.
And now it's made for everybody, including people who can be a little perverted if they want to.
Sure. Sure.
I don't know if I'm making any sense, but you know what I'm saying.
No, like, I know exactly what you're like saying. Yeah, yeah.
This is not going to alienate anyone while it is still doing the thing that sexy comics do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's well said.
Yeah.
Anything else to add about this one?
I just scrolled to the end and I'm more offended by these like highly digital variant covers.
Oh yeah, those are some ugly covers. Yeah. Yeah. The digital cover trend has got to stop soon, right?
No.
Right, guys?
No. I think no. I think it's only going to get worse.
I know. Yeah. I'm trying to put some positivity into the world here, guys. Come on.
They're only going to get more dead-eyed and doll-like, and not only that, but we're going to be seeing them so often that we are going to be able to like subconsciously pick up where all, that they're swiping from one another. You know what I mean? we're going to see a cover and we're going to be like, our eyes are going to roll back in the back of our heads, like the Mentats from Doom. and we're going to say that's an Art Germ variant ripoff from Wonder Woman number 5 from, you know, whatever year.
Vince is going to know exactly which photograph of Sydney Sweeney is being traced.
Come on.
Yes,
no. Come
exactly.
On.
Exactly. It's a beautiful death, my friend. It's a beautiful death.
My God. The disrespect I get on this show.
Is it disrespectful because you already know which one it is? You don't have to be trained in that way? Is that why we're underestimating your skill? Is that what's going on here?
Let's move on.
Okay. Moving on to Shazam number 10, the first issue of a new arc and a new creative team, which is Josie Campbell on words and Emanuela Lupacchino on art. Zach, start us off.
This was pretty cool. I think I've been like moderately vocal about how I like kind of haven't been feeling the Mark Waid run on Shazam in so much as I think I only read like the first issue and then like one other random issue in the run. But this felt like something that would have happened in the 80s or 90s, where just like a creator just picks up from someone else's run and just keeps going like nothing happened. Because Campbell kind of does that here, but it also does feel like a fresh start also, because there's like some new wrinkles going on with the Shazam mythology, with like the way the powers work. There's a new villain that's kind of introduced. So there's some interesting wrinkles here. It feels fresher to me in a way that the Waid run, at least the little bit that I read of it, did not. So I like this.
What do you think, Vince?
Yeah, I almost loved this.
Okay.
There's a bit in the middle where they start fighting that Hydra creature, and it goes on a little too long. Like,
I'll agree with that. Yeah,
they're kind of like, they do that thing that comics do where they like they're fighting a new enemy and they don't quite know how it works, and then in the span of like 3 or 4 pages, suddenly they seem to know everything about it. Or, you know, maybe I'm exaggerating that, but it's a lot of, yeah. Like at one point, Billy, I'm reading this right now, and he's like, they're coming from a dimensional space we can't see or process. And I'm like, well, how do you know that?
Right,
like,
right, right.
You know,
well,
2 minutes.
I think that's like a plot thing though. Why he knows that.
Because of the reveal at the end of the book.
Yeah, or because of the kind of the teases that are like sprinkled throughout the book, that it's not really Billy necessarily.
Okay. Yes. I see what you're saying, but it's like, it's
it was
doing
still
that,
weird to read. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's doing the comic book thing where like they get into this fight and they have to they have to present it all as very new and unknown to the combatants, but then they have to also explain to the reader what the, you know, they can't leave the reader in the dark, right? So they have to find some way to, like, the characters have to give you exposition to explain why the things are happening in the fight that are happening. You know what I mean? It's, I think, spoiler alert, I think Josie Campbell is a terrific writer and very smart. And like every other aspect of this issue is smart. This is just a tried and true, I guess, comic book fight scene trope that I just, I glaze over. And it's not a big deal because you have to have these, you know, but I just want to get to the end of them because I find them so uninteresting, and almost every writer writes them this way, you know. Hell, yeah. We love Grant Morrison, and Grant Morrison does this same thing where, like, the Doom Patrol will get into a thing that they don't possibly understand, and then in three or four pages they understand everything about it, and it's not in a way that feels like natural, or, you know, it's exposition. It's all exposition within the confines of a fight, you know. Yeah. It's not a criticism of the writer more than it's a criticism of the way comics dole out information in these very specific instances, right? And that part went on a little long for me. That said, the pacing of this issue otherwise, and just the if Birds of Prey was slight, and I liked that, this is anything but slight. This is pretty dense. I even from page one, like the kind of bookend sort of story that Campbell has going on here about moving day and how everybody as orphans dreads moving day because it comes with challenges and changes and new things that might not necessarily be better than their current situation, yet there's hope, and then hopes get dashed. And it shows you every one of these orphan characters experiencing it maybe in the past in their own different ways, right? And it does that all in the course of like one page or so, you know? And then it relates it to the fact that in this new scenario, in this current status quo, they're not moving to new homes or to, you know, to a new foster family or whatever. They're moving in to a new house because the previous one was destroyed, of this family that's already fostering them, that we learn is trying to adopt them as well. Just the contrast that Campbell builds there between you know, how an orphan might feel in these other scenarios versus how it's feeling to maybe actually be turning a corner in a relationship with a foster family, right? Like, that part is so well done. And that segues perfectly into, like, the realization that Freddie is a little older. He just got his driver's license. He bought a van. Takitani helped him buy the van and, like, talked the dealer down in like a negotiation. It's so rich with character. This neighbor that, oh God, I forgot about the neighbor until just right now. That reminds me so much of, like, we always complain that comics, we don't want the characters to stay in stasis or to go back to what they were in like the 80s and the 90s or whatever, or like during the mid-2000s Geoff Johns roll up to Infinite Crisis kind of era, you know. But we want to return to that style of storytelling where it felt like there were a lot of rich things going on in the background and details, and like a new neighbor moving in feels like a tease for a future arc, right?
It does, like, yes, yeah.
And that is something that comics are missing more and more these days in the attempt to write them for the trade or whatever. Like I feel like we're not going to learn what that character's deal is for several issues. And so there's the promise that down the road, that's going to become something other than just somebody for Billy and Freddy to crush over, you know?
Right, right, yeah.
That just, man, this issue was just really rich in a way that I've been missing from comics in general. And that was so good about Josie Campbell's Shazam miniseries with Mary, right? Like,
right, right.
We said the same thing about that. It was a 4-issue miniseries, and it felt like very dense, and there was a lot going on, and here the Lupacino art and the Norton art, again, two artists that, like, for my money, they can draw DC any day, you know. Anytime they're on a comic, and they go so well together because their styles are very similar. I really like this. I was almost totally over the moon for it.
We haven't even mentioned how there's like all this interdimensional stuff going on.
No, the Zeus stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll let somebody else battle
I'll
about
talk
that.
I'll talk about that a little bit. Yeah. I want to piggyback on something Zach said first, though. And I forgot to mention Mike Norton in the beginning. So my apologies, Mike Norton. Friend of Multiversity Comics, Mike Norton.
Not anymore.
Because I forgot him this one time. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But no, you know, I want to piggyback on something Zach said, which is that this feels very much like an old school. New writer comes in, doesn't throw anything away, but just builds on it to tell an interesting story. This is such a great example of that. When you look at all the stuff here, like, we hadn't really seen Hoppy the Bunny much since that Mary Marvel series, but here's Hoppy. Talkie Tawny's here.
Tony, so here comes Tony.
But just like, you know, this is such a nice example of just building on stuff without throwing anything away. And I'm sure that as Campbell gets her feet here, she will be not keeping every single thing in the foreground the way that Wade was, or the way that Jeff Johns was before her, right? Before him, rather. Like, you know, she's going to pick and choose stuff that she wants to focus on, but nothing gets tossed out here. And I don't mean like, I mean, obviously there are some comics where literally characters die and ideas are just radically changed, but a lot of times we just see, you know, certain characters, certain situations just don't show up again. And this feels very additive to what we've gotten in the last 4 or 5 years from Shazam stories, and that's awesome. I'm really happy about that. I think that's the best way to come on to a book like this is to come on accepting everything that's happened before and adding to it. This feels in that way, and in that way only, much like Cy Spurrier's Flash run right now, just not tossing out old ideas, but others building on them. And again, to echo what Zach said, this feels very old school in that way. So I really enjoyed that. But so anyway, so when Zeus fixes the house, he apparently puts in a room on it to a pocket dimension and teaches other deities how to do the same thing. So this house is like overrun with pocket dimensions that are run by different gods. And it's just a really fun thing. And that's the part of the book, you know, Vincent mentioned about the sort of the battle being a little bit arduous and just a little bit long on the tooth. I felt like when it started, I was afraid that this was going to, that the sort of hopping between pocket dimensions was going to get tiresome. But Campbell threads the needle with it, and you never quite get sick of it. And each one is interesting enough that the whole thing just goes down real easy. Just a real, real easy read. But not slight, like you were saying, Vincy. Like, everything about this does feel very well considered. And there are a lot of plot points that are thrown in here, you know, for future stories. I also want to mention that I don't know if Josie Campbell did this on purpose or not. I could be convinced one way or the other. But as somebody who has watched every episode of the 1970s Shazam TV show, Shazam and his mentor, whose name is Mentor, drive around in a van that doesn't look too dissimilar from this one. Does not have a wizard painted on the side of it. But the whole series takes place in like the shit-kicking, dirty parts of California with Billy and Mentor driving around in a van. So I'm not sure if that was the reference or not. But if so, I doff my cap. That is a great reference there. But yeah, no, I thought this was great. This was super fun. I do like the fact that she is promising that there are big changes ahead for the family, and that I hope we're going to see some of these characters get their powers back, some of the other Shazam family members. or if they're not get their powers back, that they have some sort of newly, like, that they have something for them to do that doesn't just make them like the kids in the background, you know, give them focus of some sort. But overall, I thought this was excellent also. Anything else to add before we wrap up for the night?
Yeah, one other thing that I thought of that is a little old school to me that I liked about this is the last page too, like the twist that Zach alluded to about that maybe Shazam is not Billy or is under mind control or something. There's some wrinkle going on here, right? Mm-hmm. But you see him burning this letter that Billy got in the mail at the end. And I love the caption that says, "Big changes are afoot for the Shazamily, but not all of them are good. Why is the captain burning Billy's letter? And what's next for our favorite foster kids?" And it's just presented as like narration almost, right? Like it's a very old school way of teasing what's coming next, you know?
It almost sounds like the end of a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah, and it's such a small touch, but I liked it so much.
I agree with all that, yeah. All right, Vince, what comes out next week for us?
Next week, we got Action 1064. We've got the Batman First Night, number two.
I think that's the first chapter of the Brainiac.
Yes,
crossover. It is. Yes, House of Brainiac.
Yeah.
We've got Batman Dylan Dog 2, Batman and Robin 8, Batman and Robin and Howard number 2, Green Lantern 10, Outsiders 6, Red Hood the Hill number 3, Sin Sons number 3, Speed Force number 6, and Suicide Squad Dream Team number 2.
We'll have to discuss off air what we're going to be talking about next week. But until then, go to dc3cast.com for information about our Patreon, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Goodbye.
Oh, man. You are going to have the whatever the Chinese Yakuza is after you.